Parshas Vayishlach, everybody. Perek Lamed Vav Pasuk Aleph. So really, all of Perek Lamed Vav deals with the exact same thing. Eila Toldos Esav Hu Edom. These are the generations, the children of Esav, who is Edom. And Pasuk Bez says, Esav Lokach Nashim Bnos Kanan. Esav took his wives from the daughters of Canaan. As Ada Bas Elon Hachiti. That's Olivama Bas Ano Bas Tzivon Achivi. And then it says in Gimel, that's Basmas, Bas Yishmael, Nevayos, as well as Basmas, the daughter of Yishmael, the sister of Nevayos. So we have three wives. We have Ada, we have Olivama, and we have Basmas. Okay? Don't worry, you don't have to know those names just yet. But the first question that everybody has to ask here is, why do we care about this? I couldn't care less about the children of Esav. There is no reason why I need to know about them. There's nothing that I'm gaining from knowing about them. And now all of a sudden the Torah has to throw that in for me and say, oh, by the way, I have these children of Esav over here that we're talking about. Why? Why do I need this? It's totally pointless. So the Belzer Rebbe says it after the Torah mentions all the children of Yaakov and goes through the 12 Shvatim of Yaakov, you know, and what we need to know about them after they were born and what they did, including how they fought for Dinah and everything they did over there. We then go into the children of Esav to show you the major difference between Kedusha, the children of Yaakov, and Tuma, the children of Esav. The children of Yaakov were willing to be Moser Nefesh to save their sister. The children of Yaakov went in, and when they saw something horrible going on, they were willing to fight. They were willing to do something. The children of Esav are filled with mamzerus, all types of tumah, everything that you can imagine in the world. There's so much going on behind the scenes among the children of Esav, who is with who is the father of who, and everything that was going on. It's clear there's so much confusion. You see why HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs Bnei Yisrael in the world, yeah?
I thought the wives of Esav, the first two was...
Well, hold on. Give me like 3 seconds. I'll get there. So that's the first thing regarding the Belzer Rebbe. The Belzer Rebbe says, I don't get it. There's an idea behind it just to show you the comparison, the contrasting between these and the others. The Chidah says, the word toldos is purposely written twice with the later vav, but not the first vav, meaning there were two vavs missing in the two times it says toldos in this parsha, to tell you that there was 6 and 6 missing from Esav. That's the 12 Shvatim that were missing from Esav. When we go through all the other families in the Torah, for example, when we go through Nahor's kids and then Yishmael's kids, there's 12 kids of Yishmael. There are 12 kids of Nahor. We go through who they were in the fact that they also could have had 12 Shvatim. In theory, there could have been 12 Shvatim coming from them. They could have had 12, they could have had 12, and they didn't. By Esav, there's not even 12. At best, there's 11, most likely more like 8. You have something missing from them. The Chidah says it's on purpose to show you Esav didn't even have the qualities necessary to be part of the 12 Shvatim. Even though, in theory, Yishmael did and Nahor did, Esav was completely gone. And that's the reason why we mentioned them were there, to say that they never could have done this. It's Siyuni, Menachem Shapiro, says that Esav is known as Edom because both he and Yishmael were necessary in the world for the Avos to get their Tumah out of their system. There was Avraminu who had a little bit of Tumah within him. And Yishmael was born to take that tumah and to exude it out through Yishmael so everything goes through him. And the Bnei Keturah, Yitzchak is left as, so to speak, the perfect one. Yitzchak had to get rid of some bit of tumah that was Esav, and then Yaakov was left perfect. And Yaakov no longer had anything. He was the Bechir Sheva Avos. Everything went straight through him. And it was as if you're putting the Shvatim, I guess even the Avos, into a kiln where you fire up something to get rid of the deposits within the gold that are impurities, and in order to burn it off, you get rid of those impurities, you're left with absolute pure gold, pure silver, pure whatever it is. That's what we did with Klal Yisrael, and therefore we go through Esav to get rid of that tumah to allow Bnei Yisrael to be that much more pure. That's the concept behind it. The Me'ashi Loach, though, he goes in a different direction. We're about to speak about the major divide inside the Shvatim themselves. How the 12 Shvatim had their own massive civil war between them, with Yosef and the rest of the Shvatim. We even go through that there was an issue between the Bnei Shvachos, with Dan, Asher, right, Dan, Asher, Gad, and Naphtali, how they were considered different than the Bnei Leah, and even the Bnei Rachel, how they were treated differently. There's something that happens within Klal Yisrael itself. So before we get to that divide, we go through something that he calls Birurim. The Ishbitzer says that we need to be separate from the nations around us. That's not just physically, like in proximity, we say that we're farther away from the other people of the world. No, that means that spiritually speaking, we can't have anything to do with them. We're separating ourselves from them and taking ourselves. And then we can divide amongst ourselves what each person should do, what every shavit should specialize in. Only then can we do that. We have to have one beer, one separation. And then after that, our own separations between ourselves for it to happen. The truth is that no one could really tell the difference between Yaakov and Esav. No one could tell that difference between Yaakov and Esav for many, many years when they were growing up. They looked alike. And I know Esav was born with that red beard and the red hair and everything. It could have been that David HaMelech was born the same, that Yaakovinu was born the same way. It could be that Yaakov also had red hair and a red beard. And no one could tell the difference between them. They seemed to be very alike in so many different ways. Even when Esav went off at the age of 15, it could be that people didn't notice it when you looked at them. It could be that Yaakov and Esav even wore the same type of clothing, that they looked very alike until they were 63 years old when Esav started to go off. It's true. It was really, that difference was really recognizable in the womb. When Rivka Imenu used to walk by the houses of idol worship and Esav tried to get out, she used to walk by the houses of the Batei Medrash and Yaakov tried to get out. There was something even there. But it's unrecognizable when the people are there. The truth is, it's difficult for people to see the difference between us and them, even nowadays in this world. It's difficult. We look similar. We dress similar. We have their names. We have their language. We're speaking as they do. It's hard to notice the difference. Maybe by men, you have a kippah on your head or tzitzis out that makes you a little bit more distinctive. But a woman doesn't always have that. Even if they're wearing a shetel, it doesn't necessarily show that they're different. There are women that are in the Arab faith, in the Muslim faith, who definitely look different. They look distinctive. You can see that distinct look. You can tell, especially if they only have their eyes looking. There's nothing more disconcerting than driving a car, looking next to you and seeing only a black hooded mask, right? That goes right next to you, that's sitting right next to you, and you're just like, how in the world is she seeing anything? There's nothing. But that's at least, you can tell a difference. We can't always tell the difference. Says the Ishbitzer, the only way for us to eventually see Mashiach come and differentiate between Klal Yisrael and the rest of the world is for us to start to bridge, I guess, to make that divide happen right now. To take that connection that we have between us and divide it and show that there's a difference between us. And that's what this parsha is doing. Look at what Esav is. They're separate. They're distinct. They have their own parak, so to speak. Their own area, the end of parsha Vayishlach, and they're not like us. So says the Meshulach, that's why we put it over there. The Miyamloi says when he starts off this parak in Lamed Vav, he doesn't say much throughout the entire parak, but he says, even though these three upcoming parshios about Esav and Seir, etc., have no real chidushim, says the Miyamloi, which is surprising. Have no real chidushim. Nonetheless, there's a chiyuv to go through them because the Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum. You're supposed to go through every part of the Chumash well and understand it all. But you should know, there are secrets hidden within the text, he says. There are secrets that are there. If Moshe Rabbeinu put it in the Torah, there must have been a reason for it. And the truth is, there's no difference between this parsha of Esav and the parshas of Shmos or the other parshas of Bereishis. They're all the same in that way. They're all filled with secrets. Sometimes we're privy to a few of them. Sometimes we have nothing at all. These parshas, this parak especially, parak Lamed Vav, we're privy to almost nothing of it. The Vilna Gaon, this is from Tam Vadas, from Rav Schirmbach, he says, the Vilna Gaon said that these secrets were revealed to him about these prakim, and he goes through them in his explanation to Sifra Ditzniusa, the Sefer of Kabbalah. And in his explanation to it, he goes through how these parshios were mechadish to him, how Bnei Yisrael will be throughout Gullus, what's going to happen to them throughout Gullus, and how they're going to survive. All it is names. But through the names, he was able to figure out certain things that were able to tell him how we're going to live throughout the Gullus. So there are secrets here. There are certain things that are there that maybe we don't really see. Maybe it's something that we miss out on whenever we go through the Parsha, but there's something there. And even just reading through the Parsha has an effect on how we look at the world. We see that Esav still counts for something, and there's Ramazim here that are really, really special that hopefully will be revealed to us in the near future, that we can understand how they work. I will tell you, Yalkut Ruveni has a huge piece on this parsha, I did not understand what he was going through, and I didn't want to go through all of it. But the Alchemy has a massive piece going through the children and explaining how it refers to different parts of the world. It's a very, very cool piece over here. So something, yeah, Yoni. Yeah, but that's for the beginning. Because when you're getting, you always say Parshas Vayishlach, the very first couple Aliyahs, because when you're dealing with Yaakov versus Esav, and you're dealing with business and work and whatever it is, and you're going up against Esav, then you should have this Parsha as like your lead-in to the rest of the week. I don't think, though, that it includes the end. I think it's only the first couple Aliyahs. Yeah, I don't think it has to do with this. But again, this would be something that a Mekubal would go through to understand the real secrets behind it, but I don't know. I'm not positive. So something really strange happens over here. As you mentioned before, this is a pasuk that mentions three wives of Esav. We have Ada, Olivama, and we have Basmas. Here's the problem. In Parshas Tolos, we also mention wives of Esav. It's in Chavav Lamedala. It says, Vayi Esav ben Arbayim Shana v'yikach Isha. He was 40 years old and he took a wife. As Yehudis Bas Be'eri Hachiti, Yehudis Bas Be'eri, as Basmas Bas Elon Hachiti. And Basmas Bas Elon Hachiti, over here, Elon's daughter is Ada. And over there, it's Basmas. Over here, we have Ahalivama Bas Ana, Bas Tzivon. And over there, it's Yehudis Bas Beri, right? Then it goes to, at the end of the Parsha, it goes through the other daughter, Yishmael. But over there, she's called Machalas. Over here, she's called Basmas. So what's going on? Did he have that many wives? Did he have that many wives over here? So if you would ask me, I would have told you there are five wives of Esav. This is what I would have told you. Five wives of Esav altogether. I would have told you there's two wives that he married over there. The daughter of Yishmael is the same daughter of Yishmael with two different names, right? And then there are four other different wives, two mentioned there and two mentioned here, all of them from the Chiti and Chivi faith. Three from the Chitim, one from the Chivi. If you would have asked me, I would have said immediately, that would be the most obvious, right? That's the most obvious answer. The first two didn't have any children of note. You would have gone by them. You would have gone to Yehudis and Basmas. Those two didn't have any children of note. So they're not mentioned over here, because over here we're only going through kids. When he married these three wives, he had children of note, and therefore everything is mentioned over here. That's what I would have told you, Riach. They had powerful and influential kids. Meaning, if you would have asked me, I would have said immediately, five, that's it. We've got a good answer for it. But the Ramban says something similar, but not exactly. The Ramban says both wives from Parshas Toldos may have passed away. Esav married the sister of Basmas Bas Elon, whose name was Ada. He did Yibum, but the other way around. He married Basmas' sister named Ada. So when Basmas passed away, he married her. And married another woman named Olivama. So there were four wives. Two of them died. Why did they die? Well, it's obvious, right? What did those wives do wrong in Parshas Toldos? They were burning incense to Avodah Zarah and blinded Yitzchak. Yitzchak, because he went blind from it, caused them both to die. And therefore, he had to marry two other women. One, the sister of his original wife, and the other one, just a random woman. So he did. He had those four wives, and that's that. That's what the Ramban suggests, and it makes a ton of sense, right, that that's what he ended up doing over here. As for Basmas and Machalas, the daughters of Yishmael, he says it makes sense. It's the same person. But since her name was Machalas, which means sickness in Hebrew, he said, I don't want to call you Machalas. That's a bad name. I'll call you Basmas, which means besummim, somebody sweet, somebody spicy, I guess, right? That's what it would be. I'm going to call you that instead. So he renamed her Basmas. So altogether, says the Ramban, five wives. Similar to what I was saying before, five wives, two of them died, two of them came about, and we have Basmas and Machalas being the same person. The Ramban also brings a medrash that the first two wives he married, Yehudis and Basmas, were actually named for Esav trying to do tshuva. Esav at the time wanted to do tshuva. So he named his wives after that. Yehudis Bas Be'eri is that he wanted to become a Jew again. Basmas, he wanted to do something good, to have himself smell good again, to bring himself back. And his point was trying to look for the truth, and unfortunately he messed up. That's the Ramban. The Ibn Ezra here, and the Chizkuni over here, they say something a bit different. Esav had four wives, that Basmas and Ada are the same person. Basmas and Ada are the same person. Both are known as Bas Elon. Basmas and Ada are the same person. Their names were changed because of different parts of their lives. But there were four wives altogether. At the time, he wanted to bring himself back to Yitzchak. You know, as we said, the Rashbam agrees with this approach and says that Basmas and Yehudis are really the same person, but the others were separate wives altogether. They're completely different. Yeah.
Another is that, is it trying to be sure that Machalas can only mean
Very, very good. That's Rashi. We're going to get to that. We are going to get to that Rashi as well. But that's the Ibn Ezra, the Chizkuni, the Sforno, the Rashbam. They all say the same basic thing, that he did marry them, they had different names, etc. The Netziv seems to prove it from the order of the Pasuk. No need to go into that right now, but it makes a lot of sense. Rashi agrees. Ada is another name for Basmas. They're the same person. She was called Basmas over here because she burned incense. She burned incense to Avodah Zarah. That's the besummon that she used to do, whatever it is. That's the reason why. She's called Ada over here for a different reason, which we'll go through. Rashi then says that Alivama is really Yehudis Bas Be'eri. Alivama is really the old Yehudis Bas Be'eri. She was called that because she outwardly denied Avodah Zarah while keeping Avodah Zarah in her heart. We know she was still burning incense back then in Parshas Toldos, but it is the same person over here. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says there's no way Esav would have abused the name of Hashem, of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, by allowing his wife to have the name Yehudis, Yud-Hei Vav, if she wasn't a really good person. So he really thought that she was a good person. That's what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, that she truly was trying to do the right thing. But it's a very, very strange Rashi. That Yelis HaShachar says, but there's no way that they were trying to do tshuva. There's no way that that's really what Esav was doing over here. It must be that he's trying to fool his father into thinking that way. And really, it's strange to think that anybody could fool their father when he has Ruach HaKodesh. But it's got to be that way. There's no other way to explain it. There's no way that they actually did it. The Chidah says that the word Ada and the word Alivama all come in, they have lishonos of znus in some way, shape, or form. The Chidah says, Ada first made crowns to Avodah Zarah. The Torah Shlema says that Ada was because she invited everyone to come near her, or because it refers to pregnancy, she was pregnant from many different people, or that she kept herself away from Esav in order to be with others. That's Ada. Alivama, she made an ohel and made it up high in a bama, in a higher area, so that everybody had to climb up to her to be able to come to her. Alivama could be that she made specific ohalim and bamos for Avodah Zarah. It's referring to all these things. The Chidah and the Torah Shlema are all saying these were horrible people. These were not good people, and they all did things that either had to do with Avodah Zarah's nus, and both. That's the idea behind it. Let's go back to Rashi for a second. Where did Rashi get from that these wives are connected to one another? How do you know that it's the same person? Where do you see that? So it's possible the Mizrahi says, because it says the word Nashav over here. Nashav means his wives. His wives that he already had. Esav Lokach Es Nashav. His already had, the wives that he already had from before. It sounds like it's people that we already know about. And the only way that's true is if it's the same people from before that we met in Parshas Toldos. Says the Mizrahi, it's got to be that way. All the other Mephoshim would have to ask what the word Nashav is there for, but that's the idea behind it. What about Chiti and Chivi? Okay, we have different answers. The Sifsei Chachamim says there were mixed families. Some were known as Chivim, some as Chitim. So even though over here it's Chiti and Chivi, and over there it's Chiti and Chiti. Okay, there was a mixed family, maybe a father and a mother. Moshe Zakenim, really, they were Chitim, but they had certain aspects of Chivi, of a snake, of other things like that. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says something radical over here that I think is very, very different. We usually see the B'nai Ches, the B'nos Ches. That's what we call them. They're not called Chiti. Why is it known as HaChiti over here? Says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, as Chiddush is, these were not the B'nos Ches. Esav knew that his father would not marry into those people, that Rivka had to be taken because Yitzchak could not marry one of the Benos Ches. So Esav stayed away from the Benos Ches. He stayed away from the Benos Kenani. He wouldn't marry into those. He married a Chiti, a Chivi. You know what that means? It means another nation that came to live among the Chitim, but was not of the Chiti faith. He wasn't a ben ches, a benos, a bas ches. That's not who these people were. They were living in the area, but they were actually people from other lands who came in order to get married. That's the idea behind it, that Esav married them and not people that his father would hate. Rivka Imenu said, I can't stand this anymore. I can't stand all the people. She equated them with Benos Ches. But they weren't actually Benos Ches. There was something totally different. And that's the reason why they're called this Chiti Chivi, because they lived in different areas at different times. That's the reason why. Another issue brought up by Rashi. Alivama in this pasuk right over here, in pasuk Gimel, pasuk Beis, says Asa Alivama Bas Ana Bas Tzivon Achivi. She's the daughter of Ana, the daughter of Tzivon. Now hold on a second. Ana is a guy. Tzivon is a guy. How is she the daughter of Ana, the daughter of Tzivon? How can you be the daughter of two different guys? That's impossible. How is that possible?
Adoption?
So it was not adoption. Not exactly that. Right? Says Rashi that Anna was the son of Tzivon, and Anna got married to a certain woman. Tzivon was together with his own daughter-in-law and gave birth to this lady, Olivama, who later became Esav's wife. So again, Anna was married to, let's just say, girl. That girl was with her father-in-law, Tzivon, Anna's father. And the child that came from that was this woman, Olivama. Olivama married Esav. And the whole point, says Rashi, is to show you they were filled with mamzerim. Filled with mamzerim. Olivama was the biggest mamzer of all. And that mamzeres, who married Esav, was the father. She was the mother of so many of the different children. That's one of the answers that's mentioned over here. And if you look through the Parsha, by the way, you will see a lot of this, where all of a sudden there are people that are together with other people where, like, wait, they weren't married at one point. There are about seven different issues of mamzerus within the children of Esav, which is another reason why we go through it, to show you this was not a very clean family. This is a horrible family that was doing horrible, horrible things. Tzlachim Psachim says a little bit more graphic. It's possible that both Anna and Tzivon were fathers of this lady, Olivama. That they were both together the fathers. Now, that's a little bit of a problem. This Tzlach, this is the note of Yehuda, Rabbi Cheskel Landau. The Chassam Sofer says that's impossible. It's impossible for it to happen. And seemingly in science, it would be impossible for that to happen. But the Tzlach says that it's possible they were both there. Ibn Ezra says they might not...
Know.
I'm sorry?
Maybe they just don't know.
Ibn Ezra says they didn't know who the father was. It seems from the Tzlach, he's saying, no, they both were their father. And that's why she's known as Bas Anna Bas Tzivon, right? But Ibn Ezra just suggests nobody knew. They weren't sure. It could have been Anna's daughter. It could have been Tzivon's daughter. But nobody had any idea. So it's mentioned as both. But there is a possibility that Anna is not a boy, but a girl. It seems from the rest of the Parsha that Anna is a boy, and it's not a girl, because the rest of the Parsha, there doesn't seem to be girls mentioned anywhere. And Anna found the Yamim later on in the Midbar, so it seems like he's the one. It's a guy more than a girl over here. But it's possible that it was a girl, and then it would make sense. Listen to what it says. Olivama Bas Anna, right? Bas Tzivon, who is the daughter of Tzivon. That would make sense. That also works with the fact that we said before her name was Yehudis Bas Be'eri. Maybe Be'eri was the dad. Anna was the mom. Tzivon was a Zaidi. Maybe that's what it's referring to. Tzivon was Anna's father. That's a possibility. It's another way of looking at it. It could very well be that the Ibn Ezra's shot in saying that the Chizkuni, Tosus Bava Basra, Kuk Tazvav, all say that idea to be able to get there through. Now, we're going to get into something that's a little bit different in this Parsha. Rashi says Basmas, the daughter of Yishmael, is known as Machlas earlier, right? Earlier at the end of Parsha's Toldos. So listen to this. The reason she's called Machlas, says Rashi, there are three people who are forgiven for all of their sins. All of their sins are gone once they have something happen to them. A convert, a ger. Whenever a ger converts, they automatically lose every single one of their sins. A king, when a king is put in charge, and that's not lav dafka king, a nasi, a leader of anything, a leader of a nation, as soon as they become the king, they lose all of their sins. And a chassan on the day of his wedding. When a chassan gets married, he has a mechila for all of his sins. We learn from over here. When Esav married this woman, he had a mechila for all of his sins. That's Machlas. Her real name was Basmas. But he had a mechila for all of his sins. He was forgiven for everything. And it really comes from Yerushalmi. Bikurim, Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel. This is not Rashi's Chiddush. It's from Yerushalmi, a Medrash Shmuel as well. In both those places, it takes out, by the way, the leader and puts in a Chacham who becomes Rosh Hashiva. If you become a Rosh Hashiva, all of your sins are forgiven. That might be the easier way, right, of getting there, just start another yeshiva, then you'd be perfectly fine. But that's what happens over here, which is amazing. As a side note, the Beis Shmuel says, not only is it true by a chosan, it's true by a kala as well. A kala is forgiven for all of her sins as well, if she goes ahead and she does it. He proves it, because since a kala and a chosan both have the minig to fast on their wedding day, we have that, right? Whether you do or don't, it doesn't matter. You have the minig to fast, right? If that's true, then it's like their own personal Yom Kippur. If it's their personal Yom Kippur, then they get a mechila for their sins. So it's not only mechila for the guy, it's a mechila for the girl as well. Oh, what were you going to say?
But there's also... certain age, I think it was 20, that you also forgive for your sins.
Once you turn 20, you're now chayiv in like mitzvos bidei shemayim, meaning if there's a karis bidei shemayim, that's when you're chayiv in that. You weren't chayiv up until that point. But that's not a mechila. That's not a mechila. It's that you weren't chayiv. You were putter up until that point, and then all of a sudden it comes in. I'm sorry? Not bidei shemayim, that's bidei adam, meaning anything that you could be punished for, bidei adam, you're chayiv in once you're 13. 20 is bidei shemayim, right? So that makes it a little bit different. Rav Schwab suggests the idea behind this, and I think it makes a ton of sense. Rav Schwab says, a chasen akala, if there's zocha, the shechina rests upon them. In order to be good receptacles for the shechina to rest upon them, they have to have a mechila for their sins. If they're filled with averos, the chasen and the kala, then how could the shechina rest upon them? But ish v'isha, if they're zocha, they have the yud and the hey of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name put together. If they're zocha, the shechina is with them. How do you get the shechina? Must be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so to speak, mochel them for everything they have. So too by a ger, if you want the shechina, the neshama of a Jew to rest upon them, they need to have some sort of a mechila on their sins. And so too with a king. A king is in charge of the people now. He's in charge of everybody there. He needs a mechila for all sins. That's Rav Schwab's idea, and it's brilliant. That makes a lot of sense. But why is this halakha put by Esav? There are so many people that got married. In last week's parsha, we have Yaakov marrying Rachel. Yaakov marrying Leah. Why not say there, he married Machalas? Oh, why is it Machalas? Isn't it Leah? You're right, it's only Machalas because he was mochel for all of his sins. He got a mechila for all of his sins. Moshe Rabbeinu gets married later on. Avram's marriage to Sarah isn't in the Torah. But you still have Yitzchak and Rivka. Why not mention there? Well, we have to say it by Esav that he gets a mechila for his sins? It's got to be by him? What? So, but they still had something. The Ramban says that Avram had 5 sins in his lifetime. Now, granted, we don't see that Avram had that. And that's true, by Yitzchak and Yaakov, we don't see anything specific where they had averos. But we're in Adam Chot... what's the word? Below Yechata. Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechata. A person, there is no such person in the land that can only do good and not sin. So even the Avos HaKadoshim, as great as they were, they must add something. So why don't we mention anything by them? Why is there nothing about them over there? So why is it that way? So the Gur Aryeh answer is the simplest of all. You know what the Gur Aryeh says? He's like, Yishmael's daughter happened to be named Machlas. So it worked out well. Worked out well. Her name was Machlas. It's true that a chassan gets a mechila for their sins. Good, we got both. You put both of them together. It's brilliant. That makes a lot of sense. Mayana Shel Torah says, the Malach of Esav is the Satan. The Malach HaMavis. You know, that's the Malach of Esav himself. If the Satan is able to forgive Esav's sins, the copious amounts of sins that Esav has, and he's able to take care of that, then the Satan will agree to take away everyone's sins. So no matter how bad you are when you get married, you're not as bad as Esav. And if Esav was forgiven, certainly you'll be forgiven. And that's the idea behind it, which makes a lot of sense. That's the idea behind it. The part is, Yosef says, the idea over here is that there are 3 levels for a person to get to. The first level that a person should get to is to master himself, to be the master over himself. Once you can do that, you have to be the master of your household, to be the leader of your household. And after you master your household, then you become a leader of the world. You can lead the world. And that can happen by a man or a woman. It does not have to be a man only who does this. A woman has to master herself, then she can be the master of her household, and she could be a leader of the world, similar to Devorah and Aviah. That's the idea behind it. A ger has mastered himself. He's mastered himself. And that's why he could, so to speak, get there. There's an idea of mastering himself. He's rewarded with the forgiveness of his sins. A chassan and a kala are mastering their household. They're one more. It's not just himself. He's mastering the people around him. And if you're mastering the people around you, that's the second level. You're able to master the people that are all around you. That's level number 2. And finally, you can get to level number 3. The third level is someone who becomes a leader. Then he's mastering the people all around him, and therefore those 3 levels, they're rewarded with these gifts that they get a mechila for their sins. He says, this is all from the parties, Yosef, that was the biggest issue with Nadav and Avihu. Everybody knows Nadav and Avihu looked at Aaron and Moshe. What did they say when Aaron and Moshe were walking down? When will these 2 people die and we'll be able to take over for them? That's what Nadav and Avihu said. When they walk by, this isn't Dustin and Aviram. This is nothing but Aviram. Aaron's kids. Aaron's oldest kids. And they said, when will these 2 guys die? So that we can then take over the entire place. And then the Medrash says, the reason why Nadav and Aviram died is because they never got married. They refused to get married. They refused. They said, no one's good enough for us. What's pshat? If you can't master your household, you can't be a leader of the people. Nadav and Avihu's problem is that they wanted to be leaders of people, even though they'd never mastered their household yet. And if you can't master your household, then forget it. You can't go to the next step. You can't take the next step. They were trying to jump positions, which is exactly what they did. They brought a korban in a place where they didn't ask, and they were mora halacha b'fnei rabbam. They paskan halacha in front of the Rebbe. The whole idea of what Nadav and Avihu did was this problem. They tried skipping steps without doing it in the proper order. That's the idea behind it. They didn't do their kapara properly, and therefore they got punished. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, it suggests another reason why we learn it from Esav. He says, the biggest sin in the world is to have an awesome opportunity right there in front of you and squander it. You have a mechila every Yom Kippur. You have a mechila when you get married. If you go the next day and do something dumb, you've wasted an unbelievably ripe opportunity. You have a chance to become brand new. This is like a brand new thing with nobody else there. How could you waste it when Esav took this opportunity and he was had mechila for all of his sins, and the next day was still Esav? That shows how bad of a person he really was. He's even more worse off than before. And that's the pshat, says the Chidah. She's therefore called Basmas later. She was Makalas, the opportunity for Esav to turn it around. He could have turned it around. And instead, Shav Mace. He returned back to being a dead man. He returned back to being Esav HaRasha. That's what he became, like a dead person. In the Gemara Yuma Pei Zion, Rav went to a butcher who had wronged him. We don't know the story, but this butcher wronged Rav, had done something to the kavod of Rav. This is Rav, Abba Surah, right? We're talking about the Rav from the Gemara, Rav and Shmuel. So Rav went to the butcher. He walked to the butcher. As he was walking to the butcher, so it seems Rav Huna said, Rav Huna is one of the students of Rav, Rav is about to kill someone. That's what he said. Rav went to the butcher and he said, I need you to ask me for forgiveness because you did wrong me and I want to forgive you. To which the butcher got really, really angry and picked up his knife and immediately died. Rav Huna was right. It's strange. Had Rav not gone to him, the butcher wouldn't have died. But because the butcher had the opportunity to do tshuva and it was right there in front of him and he didn't do it, therefore he died. When the opportunity is there and right in front of your hands, yes, then you get punished severely for not doing it. That's the problem that happens with it. Rav Chaim Kanievsky asks, how does this work? Just simply put, he was asked in Derech Sicha. Derech Sicha is, I think it's only a 2-volume set. There might be another volume that came out by now. But there were 2 volumes that I remember. In Derech Sicha, they were just, it was really Rav Elyamun, I think it is, who used to ask him questions, and Rav Chaim would give him answers. He put a sefer out with all the questions and answers he asked. So one of the questions he asked was just this. How does this work? How do you get a mechila for your sins? So let me get this straight. I could do horrible averos, and then just go up to a girl and say, "Arei akamidash mikudeshesli b'tavazu, kadas Moshe v'Yisrael," get married to her, divorce her the next day, but I get a mechila for all my sins. I don't have to worry about anything. It's like Yom Kippur day after day after day. And as long as I can get a girl to agree to it, I can have the same girl every other day go ahead and be mekadesh to me, and then divorce, and then mekadesh me and divorce, etc. Wouldn't that be an easy way of doing it? So Valyaman asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky what you can do over here. So he said, clearly, obviously, there's the only way this mechila works is if you do tshuva. You have to do something for it. It's not automatic that you just stand there and it's you get a mechila and you're done. No, you have to do tshuva. It's got to work that way. And it's no better than Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, you also have to do tshuva. It's going to work the same way as well. He also says it's possible it doesn't work for Bein Adam L'Chavero. If you stole from somebody and didn't pay it back, or you murdered somebody, it's possible this mechila will not work for you because it's Bein Adam L'Chavero. It'll work only on Bein Adam L'Makom. He says also it's possible that you wouldn't work, it wouldn't be able to work when it comes to like Chol HaMoed. We have a Mishnah in Negayim that says, what happens if a chassan gets tsaras? How can a chassan get tsaras? He just sent a mechila for all of his sins. How could it be? So the answer is, obviously, he could have spoken Lashon Hara right after he got married, I guess. But the answer is that even if you get the mechila, it might not work without tshuva. So it's possible you're still going to have something. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says, Esav truly wanted to do tshuva. And he really did when he married Machlas. Knowing that the two women he had already married were not good people and his father didn't like them whatsoever. When he had those thoughts of tshuva, he almost came back. And says the Rabbi Nebuchaya, he just failed. So we hint to this idea that chassanim are forgiven for their sins by Esav. Since at the moment, he really did do tshuva. At the moment when he married her, he really did have the right thoughts in his head. Even if his Yetzirah got a hold of him and didn't let him continue and finish off the deed of tshuva, but he tried so hard, he wanted to so hard. That's the idea, says Rabbi Nebuchai. He did do something over here. Last thing I'm going to mention over here is the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Says the reason why Esav is called Edom is because Hashem swore to destroy Edom throughout the Nevi'im. And the Torah wants us to know who we're referring to. Who are the people of Edom that Hashem promised to destroy? And it's all these people on Parak Lamed Vav over here. Even when Esav pretends to be like us, even when they want to be like us, and even when they enwrap themselves in a talus to pretend later on they're on our side, that's not Yaakov. That's Esav. And maybe this is another reason why this parsha was placed in the Torah. It's to show how much Esav tries to be like us, but will never make it. He's never been like us. He never will be. And unfortunately, that's going to be his downfall, his destruction at the end of days. So what do? We went through in the beginning why this parsha is here in the first place. We then went through the wives of Esav, how technically there might be five, maybe even six, but we whittled them down to five, four, maybe three altogether at the very end of the day. We then went through Machalas, and we explained that a chassid and a kala get a mechila for their sins. We had to learn why that goes to Esav itself. And finally, this idea of how this works exactly. How can it be that a person actually gets mechila for his sins? We'll stop with that, everybody. Have a great Shabbos.